This episode of Let's Talk About Sex with Lynn and Jen is not intended as a substitute for seeing your own mental health provider. We are here to initiate conversations about sex.
Let's keep the conversations going. You can find us on Twitter at TalkingSexPod or email us at TalkingSexPodcast@gmail.com. We also want to give special thanks to Nathan Diffie for our podcast cover art and our wonderful editor, Julia W.D. Harrison. Lynn Ponton and I, Jennifer Wong, are the executive producers.
This week's spotlight, we're going to be talking about a couple different things.
I'm looking forward to this discussion.
Hi, this is Jen from Let's Talk About Sex with Lynn and Jen, and I'm here today with a new spotlight episode. How are you doing, Lynn?
Well, a little frazzled because we've been having recording difficulties for a while, but we hope that this comes across well to our listeners.
Yeah, definitely we're having some technical issues, but we're trying to work through it, and please let us know when you're listening how this is sounding to you so we can keep making adjustments.
This is going to be an exciting spotlight, though, because it's the topic that so many people are talking about. And it is about sex trafficking and specifically, you know, about the Jeffrey S. Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, who's the woman who's currently missing. Regarding their experience and what's reflected in the news, and specifically about some of the psychological aspects of this.
Right, and it came about because we were originally thinking about doing an episode on Cyntoia Brown, and then this whole Epstein's suicide or potential suicide came up, and we were looking at the ways that these situations intersect, and it was really around sex trafficking, the people who do the trafficking, the people who are victims of trafficking. And so being able to talk about these different perspectives, I think, will be helpful.
And the interesting thing, I think, for our listeners who don't maybe know the story from either situation, Cyntoia Brown actually has spent a number of years, more than a decade, in prison following the murder of her, the individual who had sexually abused her and had used her in trafficking. So that's very important that we look at that, her situation. She used that time to her advantage, became an attorney, really worked hard to really learn from it, and wants to come out and work with other women who've been in her situation. And as it emerges now with Jeffrey Epstein, he was involved in a sex trafficking experience that involved a lot of younger women, some of them below the age of 18. So talking about that whole experience is, I think, important.
Well, I think to highlight with Cyntoia Brown is really that's an example of taking your trauma and directing that energy towards a more productive response. You know, it was obviously a very terrible situation, and yet she found a way to make use of her time. And she actually is, as you said, you know, she used it to study, and she is using her experience to help other women and girls not be in that same situation.
Right. And in the experience of being trafficked, you know, it is a no-win situation. I've worked with young women in that situation who've come out of it, and they're in therapy, and, you know, things that are hard for them. Many have been aggressive toward their former abuser. Many have engaged in aggression themselves toward others, which is really important to talk about. And this pertains to Ghislaine Maxwell, who probably was abused and then went on to identify with her aggressor and really abuse other people. So that's an important area to really talk about. But the girls who've been in that situation need a lot of therapy. You know, sometimes they've even been kidnapped, and in the kidnap setting have been used in that particular way. So really to underscore how important therapy is in that situation.
Yeah, it's really dealing with very complicated trauma, complex trauma.
Exactly. You know, and I learned a new word in all of this, which not that that isn't unusual. I'm on my thesaurus all the time and looking words up. But the word fawning, which is a response to trauma, and some of the women in this situation have engaged in fawning. One in particular is Ghislaine Maxwell. She's right now not available to comment, but she clearly had become very aligned with Jeffrey Epstein and was engaged in finding young women to participate in these events. And fawning is a response to trauma itself, where you align yourself with the abuser, and then you work very hard to make them feel better. And it is a response to complex trauma.
I think helping people really understand how that works. So in terms of fawning, one of the ways when we were looking it up, the way it was described is sort of as a form of people pleasing, but an unhealthy way of people pleasing. And the idea is that you want to diffuse conflict. And so you end up trying to appease the other person. And that is what the fawning is about. But it's a maladaptive response, because in doing that, you are kind of placing the other person's values above your own. And so for people in these situations, they can do or engage in activities and behaviors that are against their own personal values. And I think that's part of what's happening with Miss Maxwell. And a lot of anger is being directed towards her. And I think people maybe are not seeing the perspective of how she definitely perpetrated some of these horrible situations, but she also, at the same time, was likely a victim herself.
I think it's a very good way to explain fawning. You know, even your description helps me. I also connected, we did an earlier podcast on complicit individuals, and yes, individual women who are complicit are often engaged in fawning behavior. And it's also seen in a fairly disgusting way. It's interesting looking up the word. Shakespeare used the word, and he used it in a fairly disgusting way, that individuals would fawn over monarchs, you know, who had a lot of power, and that was somewhat disreputable to do that. That placed that the person engaging in the behavior in a lower kind of category. And but this gets back to what you were saying. It is a response when you have a powerful person. You don't know how to address them. You've been traumatized possibly by them. And, you know, the kind of the mnemonic fight, flight, freeze, or fawn is really a possibility.
And I think to explain that a little bit more, as I've been thinking about it and as I work with people, I see that it's sort of people move through these different phases. And so the fight response happens when you size the situation up and you believe that you can take on the aggressor, right? But if you know on some level that you can't do that, then your next option is to get away. So that's the flight response. But if you don't feel that you can get away, you might freeze up because you try to be as uninteresting as possible and hope that the aggressor will leave you alone. And then I think the fawn response really comes when you don't see a way out of things. And so all these other possibilities don't seem like options to you. And so if you're stuck in a situation where you're with someone who's very aggressive, then you're going to try to appease them so that they become less aggressive. And hopefully that helps people better understand rather from a place of disgust, but it's really a survival technique.
I think, again, that helps us know more about men and women who are in complicit positions and right, to better understand that response. The only thing I'd add, Jen, I see a lot of people in therapy using all four of the F's.
You know, absolutely.
And they're using them simultaneously. They're trying. I tried to get out of there. I saw a boy a couple of days ago who was trapped by an abuser in a hotel room. And he was only 12, but he alternately used a whole variety of strategies. He tried to push back and fight back. Mm-hmm. He tried appeasing him and fawning. You know, he tried freezing and pretending he was asleep. So all of them were active, you know, trying to work his way out of really a very difficult situation.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. I didn't mean that like you only, you know, use one per situation. Yeah. But I think that when you're cycling through them, it's important for people to understand, you know, what it is that is motivating that response. Because when we work with, you know, sexual abuse survivors or people who are just hearing about other people's experience, they'll often say things like, well, why didn't you fight back? Or why didn't you say something? And it's really understanding that these are the different fear responses and trauma responses. And so depending on what you believe is possible, you will also kind of fall into different responses.
And fawning can look like you're really on the side of the abuser.
Yeah.
When really that may be the only strategy available to you at that moment.
Right.
And that helps us, I think, to have more empathy for individuals who are caught in that situation. Sometimes that is the only possibility available.
Right. And I think that's why it's important that we work to create different systems where people have more options so they can get out and they can not blame themselves for what is happening.
What I notice about the Jeffrey Epstein situation, there's so many things, but that there's a lot of scapegoating.
Yes.
There was scapegoating of Jeffrey Epstein for a period of time, then he kills himself, and there's scapegoating of a whole range of different people, you know, involved with it. It becomes a wide conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with everybody weighing in and what they think happened with it. And then certainly Ghislaine Maxwell, you know, has been scapegoated in this situation. The girls who were abused, they've been scapegoated. So there's a lot of scapegoating, maybe because we don't understand this situation, or a lot of anger, not understanding the responses of the individuals, and just the horror of all these young women being taken advantage of. All of those things lead to this.
I think some of it, too, is that scapegoating comes as a maladaptive psychological defense. And so I think people want it to be very black and white. There are good people, there are bad people. And when you look at someone like Miss Maxwell, you get to see how it can be more complicated than that. What she did in terms of recruiting some of these other women was obviously a horrible thing, but she also likely was a victim of Jeffrey Epstein originally. And so I think you can see that we can't just overlay this black and white good or bad situation. And I think scapegoating is one way that people try to separate out the good and the bad. And obviously as a way to kind of protect themselves from having to think about how people get into those situations.
And it would be maybe fortunate or easier to have a good and bad response here. A guard who didn't check or beat up, you know, Jeffrey Epstein, mm-hmm. you know, and Ghislaine Maxwell, who hated all young women and did this sort of thing. And
right.
a Jeffrey Epstein who was purely a black character.
Right.
You know, all of these are, you know, ways of really simplifying something that's very complicated.
Well, I think it can be a more controversial view, but as therapists, part of what we see is kind of the whole person. And we can see that people can do horrible things, and that doesn't necessarily make them a horrible person. Because in working with abusers, you have to be able to see them in that context. And it doesn't make light of what they've done. But in order to be able to connect with them and get them to consider what they've done, I think you have to be able to see that part of humans.
And that's tough, having worked with abusing individuals who've been involved in situations similar to Mr. Epstein. You know, it's very, very hard for them to really step into those shoes and see themselves, you know, the negative aspects of themselves and also the positive aspects.
Mm-hmm.
These are people that have a lot of trouble really seeing their own complexity, and they really don't want to look at these things. And that's partly how they end up in this situation.
Well, that's what I wanted to kind of talk more about. Can you go into that? What comes to mind for me is like the priest abuse and how these abusive priests get into these positions. I think a lot of it has to do with the way that we try to keep these things in the shadows.
Well, I think institutions can play a role in abuse, and with priest abuse, definitely. The Catholic Church and its response has played a role. It's abused the priest to then ultimately participate in abuse of others. Mm-hmm. So it's a very extensive situation. And that doesn't take away individual responsibility, but it means we have shared responsibility for abuse. And I think with respect to Mr. Epstein, that's also the situation that, you know, here's the investigation of Mr. Epstein going on, and there's shared responsibility here. Mr. Epstein engaged in abuse, but others failed to protect him and a whole range of other things. So shared responsibility. That's a complex factor that I think is hard for society and hard for the individuals, the abusers, when we have them in the office. You know, it's very hard for them to focus on more complex thinking, because they too characterize their own actions either as, I was all good, I was trying to help these girls, get a job, learn about life, that kind of thing. And they hear that.
Right.
That's what Mr. Epstein would be saying. You know, they should protect themselves, you know, that kind of thing.
That's the self-grooming that we've talked about before.
Exactly. So you have a person who's self-groomed their own ideas to be totally along the lines of black and white. I will say they're very hard individuals to work with in therapy. It's important when I work with them, abusers, to have a connected system where they're also in a group, where their behavior is being addressed. Often we go through a workbook, and I've talked about that sort of thing here before. But it's very important that there be a complex program to treat this type of thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's so complicated too about the Epstein situation is that he had a lot of money, and he dealt with a lot of men who had a lot of money. So it brings up a lot of these questions about who's protecting who, what's being hidden. And I think when it comes to abuse, it's really important to look at the way secrecy plays into maintaining these types of systems.
That's been particularly fascinating to me about the Epstein situation, because you see many heads of state and men in power being involved or aligning themselves with him. And clearly he was grooming them.
Yeah.
And then maybe lying to them. But it again, you know, lends itself to people in power have to be very, very careful how they use their power and what's going on with that situation. And there again, you look at this and it's fascinating, but you're kind of aghast at some of the responses that men in power have really engaged in this story.
And I think it speaks to also how abusers are often protected at times. I mean, that's something that we face when we're dealing with our clients who have been abused by teachers, you know, obviously the situation with the priests, but we see the way people who have power sometimes do align themselves with these abusers. And that itself is another major issue that comes into play.
Yeah, I think we were talking about institutional abuse, and the patriarchy itself protects men in power who engage in abuse. So it's aligned in much the way that the Catholic Church is with the priest abusers. And the thinking is one part of that, you know, the ideology, you know, but there is an ideology that I think we can hear below the surface here that Jeffrey Epstein says to these men, you know, well, this is a great thing. You're going to really enjoy this. This is great for the woman. They get a lot out of this. You know, there's a whole, you know, grooming process that's involved in this, supported by the idea that people in power can engage in actions that really are not thoughtful about others.
I think also it speaks to how sometimes people who are in power that are abusers, they will kind of connect themselves with other abusers as a way to justify what they're doing.
Yeah, it definitely, there's our conspiracy theory kind of going wild that all of these men joined together in this, you know, underworld conspiracy of abuse. And it is right there. You know, there is some of this mechanism at play. And then you see this and, you know, your mind, my mind, all our patients are talking about this too. It's a really interesting thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that at least people are starting to talk about it, because I think that not talking about it is part of maintaining the system. So even though it's horrifying to look at what's happening and think about the women and girls who have been abused in this situation, it's really important that we have these discussions and understand the role that trauma plays into it, and understand that it's much more complex than we want to maybe believe it is.
It certainly is. And for listeners who might want to learn more, Peter Walker was the psychotherapist who really came up with the fawning term in this particular way that we have Shakespeare to thank too for really making it popular. So there are many terms in trauma that bear into this whole Epstein situation. So again, I think this has been a great, interesting topic, and we'll probably revisit it again.
I think we will. And I think particularly with the fawning, you and I talked about maybe having a full episode on that. So if you as the listener want to hear more about that, please let us know.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Jen.
Thanks. Come on. Let's talk about